podcast for all but geared toward adult first-time readers of Harry Potter, who need a space to enjoy each book and have adult conversations about it. My name is Sarah, and I'm honored that you've allowed me on this journey with you. Crack open a butterbeer, grab a seat, and let's discuss. Today, we're talking about divination and sports. Welcome, everybody, to episode 22 of First Years. So first things first, Hufflepuff is murdering everybody when it comes to house points. They are 60 points ahead of second place. Gryffindor and Slytherin are tied at 20 points. Ravenclaw has 10. And Hufflepuff is holding their lead at 80 points. And part of the reason they got there was earning an extra 10 points by a lovely review written by Steven, who is the co-host of Creating Magic, but now has his own podcast called The Pin Pod, which you should definitely check out. So thank you, Steven, for your review. If you want a chance to win the House Cup, you can earn points by writing a review and leaving your name and Hogwarts house, participating in Mindful Magic Mondays, tuning into our Insta Lives, and participating in our Insta Stories. A really fun Insta Live that we are going to have is we are going to have our Mischief Night Cocktail Hour at 8 o'clock on October 30th. So bring your cocktails and we will drink together and chat about Harry Potter. So that is Mischief Night, so October 30th at 8 p.m. on the First Years Pod Instagram Live. So today we're going over chapters 15 and 16. We left off last chapter finding out that Buckbeak is going to be executed, and the issue between Ron and Hermione doesn't matter anymore. They make up immediately because with something as serious as this, there are bigger things to worry about. And in the next scene, we get an incredible moment where Hermione smacks Malfoy because she is entirely done with him. And it's crazy because it was so out of character for her that everyone is shocked and doesn't know what to do. We actually see Malfoy stand down. He does not have the upper hand here. And what's he gonna do? Start fighting Hermione? He has to know he's gonna lose. But then Hermione disappears when they head into charms class. They find her in the common room, fast asleep, saying that she forgot to go to charms, but she was legit right there behind the boys and then disappeared. So what is going on here? How is she getting to all of her classes? During charms class, they work on cheering charms, which sounds super fun, but I'm wondering exactly how that works. And not to be a downer here, but I wonder about the ethical implications of that. Like, could you use it to stop someone being mad at you and get something that you want? I'm thinking of children using it against their parents to get permission to do something. But also, what about relationships? Could someone force someone to stop being mad at them? What kind of consciousness do you have while under the influence of one? Would you remember being mad at somebody inside, even though you're happy on the outside? Or would it come flooding back to you when it wore off? Because here we see that Ron and Harry start to get worried about Hermione after it wears off. It says, quote, "By the time they had finished their apple pie, the after effects of the cheering charms were wearing off, and Harry and Ron had started to get slightly worried," unquote. So were they just happy enough not to worry earlier? Or is it chance that it's been a few hours and Hermione still hasn't shown up and the charm is wearing off so they'd end up worried anyway? It's interesting to think about. In divination, we start crystal ball gazing. And I feel like with most things we see in divination class, our main characters aren't that into it, so we don't get a sense of whether or not divination is a real subject within the wizarding world. And by real, I mean that we can see the actual magic of transfiguration while they're in class. Same thing with charms or potions. But with divination, there's a big question about whether or not Trelawney is tricking everybody or not. but we'll talk more about her in a bit. The only two characters we really find that are into divination are Lavender and Parvati. So let's actually go over crystal gazing a little bit. So in the book it says, quote, "Harry felt extremely foolish, staring blankly at the crystal ball, trying to keep his mind empty when thoughts such as, 'This is stupid,' kept drifting across it," unquote. Crystal gazing is also called scrying, and it started to become widespread in the 5th century AD. The Christian Church, which honestly, is anybody going to be surprised by this, said that it was the work of the devil. So my understanding of crystal gazing is that you sit with the ball in a darkened room and have candles lit and gaze into the ball. There should be a mist that forms within the ball before images take shape. What's interesting here is that it says that the balls are already filled with mist when they walk into the room. But it is interesting to note that that's a similarity, that usually what happens is that the ball fills with mist before you can see things. You don't need to use a clear quartz crystal ball for crystal gazing. You can use any crystal that has a highly reflective surface. And it can be used for looking at the past, present, or future, accessing the Akashic records, getting visions or messages to give insight into a situation. Trelawney doesn't specify exactly what they're going to use it for, but I would assume it would be to look into the future. And Hermione, in another surprising event, though maybe it isn't quite surprising as she hated divination from the beginning, walks right out of class. Now, okay, I understand why Hermione is so frustrated, but I also think I'm going to take Trelawney's side on this one, because Hermione has only out loud disrespected the class. Trelawney says, quote, "I don't remember ever meeting a student whose mind was so hopelessly mundane," unquote. Which, look, not everyone is going to be good at divination. It's not going to be everyone's cup of tea. Some people may find it ridiculous, and some people may love it, but just not have the ability to do it. Hermione is someone who wants a class that she can get a handle on right away, one that she can read a book on and grasp it and excel at it. Divination isn't that class for her. We've known that since the first class. So why was she still taking it? She already has a bunch of things going on, is stressing out over her classes. So why is she taking up an hour to take a class that she already doesn't take seriously? And one of the questions I have, now that I'm thinking about it, if there are true seers within the wizarding world, are they the only ones who can actually do divination? Or can others still have an ability with it? Because in the Muggle world, you can learn tarot cards or crystal gazing by practicing and building up your intuition. So are these kids in class able to do that as well? Or do you need to be an actual seer for that? The next big part of this chapter is that the Quidditch final is approaching against Slytherin. But Gryffindor doesn't just need to win. They need to win after they're already more than 50 points up. Otherwise, they win the game but lose the cup. House biases aside, which you guys know I could talk about all day, there's a really interesting dynamic here that I want to dive into. It says that, quote, "By the time the holidays were over, tension between the two teams and their houses was at the breaking point. A number of small scuffles broke out in the corridors, culminating in a nasty incident in which a Gryffindor 4th year and a Slytherin 6th year ended up in the hospital wing," unquote. I took a class once on sports and society, and it was all about the role of sports within our society and how it's the one place we can break all of our normal behavior. You can't just swear at someone while you're in line at the grocery store, but during a sporting event, name-calling and swearing is 100% normal. And that serves a very therapeutic purpose within our society. Sports offer an escape of some kind in that same way. And what we see in this Quidditch final is that so many people care about the outcome of this game, to the point where the normal behavior is thrown out the window. People are excited and anxious, and there's something about sports that makes that come out in a very physical way in people. Harry makes sure that his firebolt is safely stored away, Wood makes sure that Harry has an entourage so nobody can hurt him, and the game is played really dirty. Lots of penalty shots are awarded. If you'll bear with me for a moment, I could only think of one thing while reading through this scene. And that is the first Islanders Maple Leafs game after John Tavares left. Long story short, John Tavares was part of the Islanders for years, and he assured everyone that he wanted to stay on the island. But that ended up being a lie, and he made a deal with Toronto and claimed he'd always wanted to be there since he was a kid. If he had been upfront about it, everything would have been fine. He would not have gotten the backlash that he did. But because he was sneaky and snaky about it, everyone got mad. Okay, so the year is 2018. It's February 28th. And Nassau Coliseum is buzzing with energy. Because it was John Tavares' first game back at the Coliseum as a Maple Leaf. Before the game even started, people were pouring beer on his jersey and stepping on it. There was a huge crowd to watch warm-ups. The booing started as soon as his skate hit the ice. People brought signs. People threw plastic snakes on the ice. And then during the game, it was a solid 3 hours of constant hissing, booing, and chanting. And I mean constant. There was no break in the shouting. The only time there was a break was the break between periods. And the Islanders ended up winning 6-1. The desperation of wanting to do well, to prove we were better off without him, that he made a mistake, was overpowering. We were all frustrated and angry, and hockey is already a fast, exciting physical sport. So it was the perfect outlet for us to get our frustration out. It was very therapeutic being in that 13,000 person crowd. It was also the best hockey game I have ever been to in my entire life. So when we look at this Quidditch game between Slytherin and Gryffindor, it's the same dynamic. Isles fans got a lot of criticism for their reaction and their behavior during this game, but I don't understand that because it's just sports. No one actually hurt John Tavares. We just called him out for lying and not taking ownership and responsibility for his decisions, and for not respecting the fan base enough to tell us the truth. You'll find rivalries in every sport. That's part of the game. And it's normal. The Yankees and the Red Sox, Barcelona and Madrid, the Cowboys and the Eagles. Slytherin and Gryffindor are the biggest rivals at Hogwarts. And Gryffindor has a lot at stake. This is their last chance to win the cup for Oliver. It's been taken away from them each year because of varying circumstances. And the entire school hates the Slytherins. So that energy is the same. Quote, "It was turning into the dirtiest game Harry had ever played in," unquote. These two teams don't care who they hurt on each other's teams. They're going after each other in a way that we really only see in sports. And the audience is on edge. They're screaming, they're excited, they're hopeful. Even Professor McGonagall gets involved when Draco tries to hold on to the end of Harry's broom. That's how crazy this game is. And when Harry finally catches the snitch, quote, "the stadium exploded," unquote. Percy jumps up and down, McGonagall sobs, Oliver Wood sobs. This game has real meaning for everybody. It's more than just a normal Quidditch game. And I'm sure some of you weren't surprised by the win, but even if you were expecting it, because that's how books usually go, right? There's definitely something more to this win than just following a typical plot formula, especially when we look at sports themselves. But one odd thing, though, before the match was that Harry saw the Grim again the night before the match, and it's hanging out with Crookshanks, which is really weird. And what stood out to me here in that moment was that Harry uses Crookshanks as a way to justify this dog not being the Grim. It says, quote, "What did this mean? If Crookshanks could see the dog as well, how could it be an omen of Harry's death?" Unquote. And it never occurred to me that the grim would be something only the person who was receiving the omen could see. In Harry's other moments where he's seen the grim, he hasn't questioned if others could see it or not. But the reality of it, hanging out with Crookshanks, makes him wonder if that's just a dog at this point and not a grim. And he wants to know if Ron can see it too. But why would there be a dog at Hogwarts? We haven't seen them before, besides Hagrid's dog. And you would think he would know about another one, right? So what does this mean? Do you think the grim is only something that Harry can see? So if that's true, what's this, like, regular dog doing just, like, hanging out with Crookshanks? And one more question about this Quidditch match. How are there 200 people supporting Slytherin? If 3/4 of the school is supporting Gryffindor, which we can assume because Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff applaud Harry as he walks into the Great Hall, there's no way there's 200 people wearing Slytherin green at that match. Harry's year has 10 people in it, 5 boys, and we can assume 5 girls. If that holds true for the rest of the houses, there's only 70 people in each house. That means Hufflepuff, Ravenclaw, and Gryffindor are 210 people, and Slytherin is only 70. There aren't enough teachers for them to all be wearing green and make up 200 people. So where are the other 130 people supporting Slytherin? As we're further on into the series, and I hope you guys are becoming fans now, we can point out things that don't make sense and might not vibe with the continuity. And we do so out of love because it's fun to speculate about. In the next chapter, we hit exam time. And we learn what types of exams the older students take. So there are OWLs and NEWTs. Percy is getting ready to take his newts, and he and Hermione are both very stressed. Hermione is because she somehow has to take multiple exams at the same time. But during this, we find out that Buckbeak is getting an appeal, but that the ministry is bringing an executioner along, which makes me again question the ethics and the justice of this committee within the wizarding world. Why would you bring an executioner to the appeal? That's not the point of the appeal. Just like Hermione says, quote, "That sounds as though they've already decided," unquote. And even though our team wants to go and visit Hagrid, they can't. And we're reminded that Harry's invisibility cloak is still in that statue that holds the passageway to Hogsmeade. At least until Hermione gets it. But if I was Harry, I would be unbelievably stressed about if someone was going to take it or not. But I love in this scene that Ron says, "This isn't justice. These kids are already questioning the unfairness of a system they live in," which many of us don't until later in life. In divination, they have their final exam, which consists of crystal gazing, and Harry makes things up in relation to Buckbeak, even though it seems like Professor Trelawney is trying to get him to say that it'll end badly. Harry doesn't, and this gets him points marked off, which seems unfair, but okay. But before he leaves, Trelawney seems to have a real prediction. So she says, quote, "It will happen tonight. The Dark Lord lies alone and friendless, abandoned by his followers. His servant has been chained these 12 years. Tonight, before midnight, the servant will break free and set out to rejoin his master. The Dark Lord will rise again with his servant's aid, greater and more terrible than ever he was. Tonight, before midnight, the servant will set out to rejoin his master." And what's funny here is that she doesn't believe it actually happened when Harry is trying to describe it to her. She doesn't remember it and doesn't think that that would be a real prediction that she would make. So what do we make of that? Do we think this was real or fake? And what do we think it means? We haven't heard from Voldemort in present day in a while. Do we think he's at Hogwarts again? Do we think he's attached himself to somebody else? His servant has been chained these 12 years. We know that Sirius has been in Azkaban for 12 years, but what more is he breaking free from? He's been out of Azkaban since the beginning of the book. What else is he going to need to break free from? Unless it's talking about Harry, since he was the one who made Voldemort fall, is this the night that Harry is most at risk? Also, do we think that predictions like this are set in stone or are they fluid? Do we think that what she says has to happen or does it depend on people's actions? So, is it a good idea or a bad idea that he's out of the castle deciding to visit Hagrid? Well, it pays off, I have to say, because we do find Scabbers. He was hanging out in Hagrid's hut in the milk jug. But he's acting kind of weird. He's thin, he's losing fur, he's desperately trying to get away from Ron. You would think he'd be happy to see him, but he isn't. And he keeps trying to get away from them, which makes it difficult for them to leave Hagrid's as the executioner is coming, along with Dumbledore and Fudge. And it's so sad to me that Buckbeak seems to know what's coming. It breaks my heart that animals always know when something bad is going to happen. The trio do start to make it up toward the castle, but Scabbers bites Ron and is trying to get away when they hear the axe come down and the deed is done. And I want to note here that it says, quote, "The sky had turned to a clear purple-tinged gray, but to the west there was a ruby-red glow," unquote. And Professor Trelawney's prediction said, "Tonight, before midnight." So what do we think is going to happen in the next chapter? Or chapters? Let us know at firstyearspodcast@gmail.com, or you can comment or DM us on Twitter or Instagram @firstyearspod. As always, if you would like to earn house points, please rate and review wherever you listen to your podcasts, and leave your name and your Hogwarts house in order to win house points. Also, please remember that we are going to have a Mischief Night cocktail hour on October 30th at 8 p.m. Please make sure to mark your calendars. I'm really looking forward to it. And we will see you guys next time. First Years is a production of Matchbook. It's produced by Quinn Parker and myself, Sarah Jones-Dittmeyer. All sources can be found in our show notes or on our website at authorsarahjonesdittmeyer.info/firstyearspodcast. That's Sarah with an H, and Dittmeyer is spelled D-I-T-T-M-E-Y-E-R.